The idea was to try to hit a large and significant shrinkage of the size of the federal government, measured at least in terms of number of employees. Best we can tell, the target, which was about 275,000 employees, was reached by people on the back of an envelope, just trying to figure out how much did they think they could do. But from there on, most of it had to do with putting buyouts on the table and trying to massage people out the door. And the real problem is that you end up with a workforce that doesn't necessarily match the job that has to be done afterwards. So they did, in fact, shrink the government. They got very little political payoff out of it. Al Gore, after all, lost the presidential race and didn't even use reinventing government as a major element in his campaign. And in the process, we lost a fair number of federal employees and got ourselves out of sync with the number and the kind of employees that we need. So it's not a case that, boy, we can't make any kinds of cuts, but we just have to make sure that when we do it smart.
Well, that was my next question. It doesn't sound like it's an argument against downsizing per se, but how things are downsized.
That's right, and that's the key part of the problem here. It is so easy just to say, we had to just whack a few federal agencies, we had to lay off 10% of the federal workforce, we ought to try to have a massive downsizing. And we might, in fact, decide we want to do any of those things, but all of it has to be done in a context of making sure that what we do in a way that's smart. Do we want to eliminate the Department of Commerce? Well, if we do, what's going to happen with the Weather Bureau and with NOAA that's in charge of producing all the data that produces private weather forecasts? We can talk about eliminating the Department of Labor, but what's going to happen with all the job training programs that so many people rely on? We can talk about trying to shrink the size of the federal government by, say, only replacing 9 out of every 10 people who retire, but what do you do with air traffic control or with the people who administer Social Security payments? It's clear that you don't want to do it across the board, and once you start going down that road, you really buy an obligation to try to think about how to do it in a way to make sure you have the people that you need, that you don't cause the programs that you really care about to suffer, but at the same time you can achieve the downsizing targets that you have. And that's just much too complicated a conversation to fit a 7-second soundbite, and there's often a big gap between the big, bold political promises and the results that we actually produce.
But there also seems to be that argument that it sounds like you're making, which is it's not just a matter of the efficiency of the government when it is downsized, but your political future, Mr. and Mrs. Politician, also may depend upon how you manage to pull this off.
Well, exactly. And the problem, if you look back over the Bush administration, you look at the public opinion polls, the one thing from which the Bush administration was never able to recover was the failure to try to deal adequately with the problem of Hurricane Katrina. That was the one point where the negatives exceeded the positives, and the Bush administration never recovered. So if there's any lesson at all, it's that for the things that the public cares about, the public's going to be very unforgiving if programs are not managed well. And what's happened over the period of the last 20 years or so is that we've cut and we've slashed and we've downsized and we've reorganized and restructured. And at some point, you get down to the nub, and you've got to decide what it is that you really care about, how can you make sure you get the job done well, and then what is it that you don't want to do, and what services and employees can you cut. But a strategy of just shrinking the workforce by 10%, for example, and an across-the-board basis is guaranteed not to work, because the one thing you know you don't want to do is delay off air traffic controllers.
So are you making the argument, then, that we have reached the point of diminishing returns?
We are at the very least at the point where arbitrary and across-the-board cuts are guaranteed to cause lots of serious damage. Can we reduce federal employment more? Sure. But the only way that we're going to be able to do that is to decide that there are things that we don't want to do. The idea of being able to go through and just cut out the slack and be able to find some way to make the workforce work better with what we have left is just it's a losing proposition, because sooner or later it's going to reach around to bite the policymakers and make those decisions, and will inevitably produce some kind of problem that they won't be able to recover from. Now, there is an argument that people make, which is that if you really don't believe in government to begin with, one of the ways to try to kill it is to take away the people who manage the programs, and then if you take away the people who manage the programs, maybe the quality of the services will diminish, and that will create an even stronger case for even more cuts in government. So there's a kind of conspiratorial view to this that is worth taking seriously. But the bottom line is we need to have a pretty serious conversation with ourselves about what it is we want government to do how to make sure that what we do well, and if we don't want to do it, we can cut it and eliminate the federal employees. But that, I fear, is much too sophisticated a conversation for the kind of political rhetoric that's swirling around right now.
We are talking with Don Kettle, the Dean of the School of Public Policy at the University of Maryland. So it sounds like the answer may lie in something other than downsizing. I mean, if you do sit down and decide what business the government doesn't want to be in anymore, and that would be the area you downsize, otherwise you can't really downsize much more, and you'd have to come up with other answers.
And I think that's the problem that we find ourselves in. There are lots of arguments that federal employees are overpaid, that benefits are too big, but the bottom line is that most of what it is that federal employees do is to leverage vast amounts of activity throughout the rest of the government and in the private sector. And if you run the risk that if you get a small percentage of things that federal employees do wrong, it ripples out in many, many, many larger ways across the board. We have a tiny, tiny percentage of federal employees who manage Medicare and Medicaid. They don't get that right, then it affects millions of citizens around the country and hospitals and nursing homes everywhere. And so the real problem with that, with defense contracts, with regulatory programs, is the extended reach that each federal employee has, because very few federal employees actually produce direct goods, federal goods and services. Most of them are in charge of leveraging other kinds of services. And if you cut that, you run the risk, if you get it wrong, of causing lots of damage. And for the things that the federal employees do themselves, that means air traffic control, collecting our taxes, which we love the IRS for, airport screening, if we screw that up, then it really interferes directly with the kinds of things that people expect the government to do. So we're really at a spot where we've got to be much more thoughtful this time, because if we don't, the implications could be much more severe. If we're interested in trying to save money, if you look at the Government Accountability Office's high-risk list, which is a collection of 30 programs especially prone to fraud, waste, and abuse, and you look carefully at each of them, the one lesson that comes through very clearly is that 29 out of the 30 of them, one way or another, have to do with basic problems of human capital, getting the right people in the right places, the right skills to make the right decisions. And the 30th is human capital itself. This is the kind of great hidden area of both potential for improvement in the federal government and the kind of mistakes that we make way too often. And in the end, if we really want to get this right, we got to look at human capital as a fundamental obligation and responsibility and advantage that the federal government has. Good private sector companies realize that everything begins with the people, and the government needs to follow that lesson as well.